Appellee's lawyers. Next case for argument is Beloit Liquidating versus Joy Global. Mr. Levison.
May it please the court, Len Leverson for the Beloit Liquidating Trust and David Boland. Justice Holmes taught us that a word is not a crystal, transparent and unchanged. It is the skin of a living thought and may vary greatly in color and content according to the circumstances and the time in which it is used. And so it is with the words of statute. Section 1447C of Title 28 was amended in 1988. The prior version of Section 1447C provided that if at any time before final judgment it appears that the case was removed improvidently and without jurisdiction, the district court shall remand the case and may order the payment of just costs. There are two problems with the language of that statute. Some courts interpreted it to mean that there had to be an absence of jurisdiction as opposed to a procedural defect, and the meaning of just costs was unclear. So Congress amended the statute to say that, to say what it says now.
Which is what? Because each sentence in Section 1447C addresses a different subject.
Yeah.
And the sentence regarding costs doesn't say that costs may only be awarded where there is no subject matter jurisdiction or, you know, some defect in the removal. So. Why should we read that limitation into the cost provision?
Because every court ever to address the issue has read it in there because
that's not a good read. That's not a reason. That's an appeal to authority. That doesn't answer the question.
Because it is inherent in the structure of the statute, for one thing, and because it was not Congress's intent in amending the statute to make costs available when removal was proper.
Where is there any, but I have the same question that Judge Rosner does, where it looks as if the,
it's not in the language, Your Honor. It's not in the language of the statute.
Why should we stick it in? I don't understand.
Because there is no reason to allow, Congress did not intend the cases involving the imposition of costs upon a remand have not intended to allow the allowance of attorney's fees where removal was proper at the time of removal. The purpose of Section 1447C's just costs provision is to allow a modification of the American rule where removal was improper. There can be cases, Batty versus Berkeley Farms, for example. Complaint stated a federal cause of action at the inception. Case was properly removable, and it was removed. The plaintiff amended its complaint to delete the federal cause of action, and therefore there was no longer federal subject matter jurisdiction. The defendants moved to remand. The Ninth Circuit held, and I think properly, that under these circumstances, it is not in the design of the statute that costs be allowable.
Now, is there still a bankruptcy proceeding in Delaware?
Yes, there still is. It's my understanding that there is a case out there. The plan has been confirmed, but typically post-confirmation, there are various things that are going on in
But your trust, your client, this is something that was created to hold assets of the bankrupt? Is that what it is? And why did you want to be in Delaware, in the Delaware Bankruptcy Court?
Because in our view, Joy Global was violating the terms of the confirmed plan, and we wanted Judge Walsh to spank them. They didn't turn over the documents they were supposed to turn over. And we felt that it's important to the integrity of judicial orders that when a party violates a judicial order, they should not be able to sneak away, go into state court, and get into the end of a long queue to trial, a curious jury trial on the issue of whether privileges applied or who owned those privileges. We wanted Judge Walsh to tell them, obey the plan, turn over the documents that belong to Beloit. And they filed the state court declaratory judgment action as a stall tactic.
Now, Joy Global suggests that the trust knew or should have known that every equitable factor strongly favored abstention and remand. If that's true, then wouldn't the cost award be appropriate here, even if it might not have been in a case where the equitable factors were more closely balanced?
No, because several reasons. In our view, the factors did not favor remand. Section 1452B does not contain an attorney's fee provision. Section 1334C1 and Section 1334C2 do not contain attorney's fee provisions. It is the better view that mandatory abstention does not apply to a removed case because there's no state case pending in favor of which.
I don't understand mandatory versus permissive abstention. I've never seen that before. Is that some bankruptcy concept?
Permissive abstention is simply a notion that where there's an issue of state law, it's a grab bag, frankly, of Burford and Pullman and various sorts of abstention.
Is this just some bankruptcy thing?
Yes. Sections 1441C1 and Section 1334C1 and 1334C2 occur in the provisions conferring bankruptcy jurisdiction on the district courts, and were enacted in response to the Supreme Court's decision in Northern Pipeline.
You know, something just occurred to me.
1334C and what?
C1 and C2.
Something just occurred to me when you said that, you know, you wanted this Judge Walsh to spank them, because Judge Eisenberg appeared to have thought that the trust was engaged in forum shopping when it removed this case.
Yes, he was, and I have two responses to that.
Well, one, I guess, is that you wanted Judge Walsh to spank
him. Yes. First of all, there are many senses in which forum shopping is not inappropriate. Every time you remove a case, you're engaging in forum shopping. The existence of multiple fora within which to bring lawsuits has been a feature of Anglo-American jurisprudence for centuries, and I believe is in large part responsible for the excellence of our jurisprudence, as Judge Posner has pointed out in the federal courts. There may be circumstances where it is inappropriate, where somehow something has happened and you're trying to sneak out of a forum, where you're engaging in some sort of opportunistic forum shopping. That is one of our arguments on appeal, if there ever were to be discretion.
Do you think the remand was erroneous? You should have been permitted to go to Delaware.
The finding that mandatory abstention applied was erroneous. Remand under Section 1452B is so broad and vague that it's hard to say that it's in error. But mandatory abstention was in error. To the extent that any finding was based on Judge Eisenberg's conclusion that the state courts had done something that we didn't like, and we were taking our marbles and going back to Delaware, that's based on an erroneous supposition of fact, which makes his exercise of discretion, if he had it, erroneous. I'd like to save a little bit of time for rebuttal.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Moorman.
May it please the court, I'm Christopher Moorman. With me in court is Paul Wynn, both Michael Best and Friedrich, and we represent Joy Global, the appellee in this matter. BLT began its argument with a fairly fancy way to say the statute doesn't mean what it says. But I don't think you can read into the statute
Well, you yourself say in your brief that the judge can only award fees if the remand was improper. So what do you mean by improper?
The judge did find the remand was improper, and we think improper is within the discretion.
But by improper, you just mean incorrect, not egregious.
But improper does not mean, as BLP urges upon this court, one of two limited things, either no subject matter jurisdiction or no procedure or a procedural defect.
Yeah, well, Section 1452B seems to be somewhat unique in that it permits a remand on any equitable ground. Is it your position that the court may award costs whenever it decides that the equities favor remand?
I think the court does have the discretion, as the cost statute says, to award costs in any order of remand.
Well, wouldn't that place an undue chill on a party's right to remove under, that section to the extent that it renders the removing party liable for failing to predict how some court is going to balance equitable considerations? And, I mean, it seems to me that in your view, a party doesn't have to commit any error in order to be liable for costs, so long as the court ultimately decides that some equitable ground favors remand.
No, I don't think that's our position, because we do not take the position that costs would be appropriate in any case. In this case, it is appropriate, and it's important to note that remand in this case was accomplished not only pursuant equitable grounds, but also pursuant both permissive abstention and mandatory abstention. And in fact, the court, and we disagree strongly with BLP.
When is abstention mandatory?
Yes, it was.
When?
Mandatory abstention is when the factors of the statutory factors are met, and I don't know them off the top of my head. We went through them with the court, and it's in Judge Eisenberg's decision that he went through the factors that are met. I believe there's four or five of them, and found that every factor was there, and therefore he didn't have discretion. The remand on equitable grounds and permissive grounds was in addition and separate to mandatory abstention. And in fact, if you look at Judge Eisenberg's transcript, he takes pains to say, I am now ruling separately on mandatory abstention and finding that applies to walking through all the factors.
Bottom line, why would this be a case in which we could say that the removal was improper from the get-go?
The removal was improper from the get-go, first because Judge Eisenberg found that. And he did specifically find that.
Go to Plan B, quick.
It was improper from the get-go because it involved improper form shopping. And the plaintiffs, BLT...
You have to be more concrete.
BLT in this matter, every factor, equitable, and probably made perhaps more important, mandatory abstention required this to be sent back to state court.
Why?
Why did it require it?
Yeah.
It required it because the statutory factors were all...
You're being so vague.
If I can grab the statute.
Yeah.
Mandatory abstention is found at 1334C2, and it requires a timely motion, which was made upon a state law claim or state cause of action.
Was that not done here?
What not done?
They didn't make their claim timely?
No, the motion for abstention must be timely.
Oh, okay.
So these are the factors necessary to grant our Joy Global's motion for abstention.
Yeah.
Joy Global had to make a timely motion, which it did. The matter must be a state law claim or state law cause of action. The bankruptcy court found no problem in that this was a property dispute. a property dispute between non-debtors. It didn't involve construction of the bankruptcy plan. It involved determining who owned property. So the judge had no problem finding it was a state cause of action. Third factor, related to a case under Title 11 but not arising under. That's the core versus non-core. This was clearly non-core. Judge Eisenberg had no problem finding that. And I think it was non-core was a stretch, but that was the finding and what we argued under this statute. And the final factor is that the action could not have been commenced in federal court originally. And there was no argument presented that this action could have been commenced in federal court. Amongst other issues, perhaps wouldn't reach the jurisdictional amount limit. But the issue was never raised that it could have been. So those factors were met. So if you look at 1334C2, as you're considering if you're going to remove this or not, you see that the court has to send it back to state court. They don't have any discretion. Now, that being said, C1 is the permissive extension. C1 and 1452, equitable remand, the factors are really very similar, and in fact, the courts analyzed them together, as did the court in this matter.
What did these defendants do that was more blameworthy than failing to predict that the outcome of the abstention analysis underlying the bankruptcy judge's remand order? In other words, what did they do that was worse than just sort of failing to predict here?
As is outlined in about 13 pages of Judge Eisenberg's decision, there were really no factors that they could hang their hat on that this belonged in Delaware bankruptcy court. But second, I would point out, they didn't need to do anything wrong under this statute. It's not a sanction. Bad faith is not required. That was specifically removed by Congress. And so they didn't need to do anything wrong, per se. In fact, some of the case law, the Souter case, I believe, says you can even have a colorable argument and lose on your colorable argument, and fees can be appropriate, because this is an abrogation of the American rule by Congress.
Well, they say that the committee's suit in Wisconsin State Court was the term they used, your opponent uses, the stall tactic.
Yes. That argument.
Can you comment on that?
Yes, absolutely. That argument.
If that were true, that would knock out the mandatory abstention. Right, because 1334C talks about
time. Correct. There is one more factor. That's right at the end, that it can be timely adjudicated, and that is correct. There is absolutely nothing in the record to support that allegation. That is simply the opinion of counsel. It was pressed strongly to Judge Eisenberg, and Judge Eisenberg firmly rejected that Milwaukee County somehow couldn't litigate this property dispute. And in fact, pointed out repeatedly that BLT had brought two other actions, and there are two related actions that really gave rise to this fight, two other lawsuits that gave rise to this lawsuit. BLT brought those in Milwaukee County. That's where they brought them to get resolved, and in fact, one of the lawsuits they tried to a jury already and lost. The other one's been dismissed on the pleadings and is up before the Wisconsin Supreme Court in February.
Well, they say also, that this state court case depends in part on interpretation of the confirmation order.
We firmly disagree with that. The confirmation order directs Beloit Corporation to turn certain things over to the liquidating trust. Does not direct Joy Global to do that. Now, that being said, may I have permission to continue?
Sure.
That being said, Joy Global doesn't dispute that we need to turn over the Beloit Liquidating Trust what belonged to Beloit Corporation. No dispute about that. The dispute.
The only question is
what's owned. It could be desks, phones, whatever it is, there is a dispute about things that are in Joy Global's possession that
The confirmation order doesn't list the assets.
It says give them what they own. Well, then that's why this was a non-core matter.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Moore. Mr. Leverson, how much time did he have? 1 minute?
Briefly to respond to Judge Rovner's question, what was it that was improper from the get-go? We would have had to predict that they would actually file a motion for mandatory abstention. If they had failed to file a motion in timely fashion.
But the way Mr. Moorman describes it, it fits 1334C to a T.
You have very little in your brief
about why it isn't a mandatory abstention case.
Three reasons, at least two. The majority view, the view of Judge Leif Clark, is that for abstention to apply, there must be a state court case pending. That's what 1334C2 says. If an action is commenced, that's one of the elements of 1334C2, there is an action pending in state court. That is always the rule if you're talking about abstention. You have a federal action and a state court action. There's an action commenced in state court. Where an action has been removed, if I may be allowed to finish, where an action has been removed, there is no longer any action pending in state court, and mandatory abstention is simply inapplicable. And we cited a plethora of authority, I believe, in a footnote to support that. Some cases do say that mandatory abstention applies and remand applies, but they don't address the issue very well, the majority of them.
Well, clearly, when he ordered the remand, there was a case, there was a case, right?
There was no case pending in state court.
When he ordered a remand?
At the time he ordered the remand, the matter had been removed to federal district, to bankruptcy court.
And I don't, the remand order, remand to where?
Remand to Milwaukee County Circuit Court.
Right.
By the way,
it had to be a case. You don't remand to...
The case has never been reopened in Milwaukee County Circuit Court. The plaintiff has abandoned it.
What is the state court case that Mr. Moorman was talking about?
That's this case, the Joy Global versus Beloit Liquidating Trust. There are two other cases.
That case must have been filed.
But that was not the case that they were alluding to. The issues weren't going to be resolved in the accounting malpractice case or in the directors and officers.
I'm not talking about the two cases he mentioned. I'm talking about our case, right? Mm-hmm. This case started in...
state court.
In Milwaukee, and it's removed. And why doesn't it fit 1334C2?
The suggestion of those courts that have addressed it is that the discussion of if an action is commenced and can be timely adjudicated in a state forum of appropriate jurisdiction means that there is an action which is in state court, which is the general rubric for abstention under Colorado River, under Pullman. You have a federal case. And that's what's abstaining. The consequence of abstention is dismissal, typically, or a stay order. But remand is an alternative to abstention when a case has been removed. Abstention is designed to address the situation where there are two cases pending, one in federal court, one in district court.
Abstention has no application to removal?
Mandatory abstention has no application to removal, and Collier...
Just 1452, that's the only thing?
That's the alternative, and it has very broad remand powers.
Yes, but surely 1452 includes 1334C2, right? That is, if you had a case that where abstention would be mandatory...
The factors probably militate in favor of
probably?
Remand.
It would be certainly, wouldn't it? Right?
I'm not sure they're exactly congruent, Your Honor.
Well, I don't know what sense it would make. You have a case, if there were already a pending proceeding, it would be mandatory to dismiss the federal case. And because there isn't a pending proceeding, instead it's remanded under 1452B. But surely... If abstention would have been mandatory if there had been a pending case, remand should be mandatory.
that remand's not mandatory. It's
equitable.
It should
be. It should be, right?
It's not what the statute
says. You should know that if this were a mandatory abstention situation, the judge would remand. Why wouldn't he?
If mandatory abstention.
Well, what sense would it make for him not to remand if the criteria of 1334C2 were met?
One of those criteria is timely adjudication, as the court pointed out.
And what's this business about a stall tax? I mean, the case hasn't been kicking around for many years, has it, in Milwaukee?
It doesn't require evidence to ascertain that when you're asking for a jury trial on who controls the privileges, which is only an issue that can be decided by a judge, both in state court and in federal court, you don't have anything ultimately in mind of going to a jury, and the plaintiff has not pursued this action on remand, has not actually gotten it opened up. They were simply trying to find a procedural device to stall production of documents, to say, oh, there's a state court pending on that. We have a jury trial set for January of 2007. That was the stall tactic. A motion for a protective order would
but
be
you
fair.
Really, you mentioned stall tactic in your brief, but you didn't argue this.
We argued it both in the district court and in the bankruptcy court, as Mr. Mormon
just
said.
But not in this court, because in this court, you haven't you put all your marbles in the business that a remand is only possible if there's a procedural defect or lack of subject matter jurisdiction?
I don't believe we've put all of our marbles there, Your Honor.
Okay, well, thank you very much to both counsel for the illuminating arguments.